I'm Michael Copps, COPPS, Commissioner at the FCC in Washington, D.C.
Does Free Speech TV have your permission to air this on their television channel?
Sure.
Thank you. I want to ask you about public interest. How should the average viewer consider public interest in the media? What do you think they don't understand about it?
Well, I think what the average viewer should look at from a station is that station covering issues and programming that is of interest to that particular citizen, that's reflective of community interests. I think public interest is predicated on the preservation of localism and diversity and competition. Public interest is making sure that your civic dialogue is vigorous and robust, and that there's a clash of antagonistic ideas, that controversial issues are teed up. Public interest is predicated on the fact that you have a diversity of programming, that it reflects local talent, local genius, local creativity, and not just an onslaught or a barrage of homogenized programming material coming out of Madison Avenue.
What do you think people that are just watching this, who aren't particularly involved in the media discussion, what do you think they need to consider about the regulatory environment and what's happening now?
No matter what their pet or favorite issue is, media concern has to be on their list of things of critical importance to them. You know, if everybody's got a favorite issue or the issue that they deem most important to them, might be environment, might be health care, might be all sorts of things. Without media reform and media democracy, whatever that first issue is, isn't going to get covered the way it should. And they're not going to have the facts they need to make an intelligent decision on that unless you have a media that is open to that exchange of ideas and the covering of issues like that. So everybody ought to be interested in this. I think there's no more important issue, domestic issue, facing the United States of America right now than getting this question of the future of our media right. How many companies, or maybe better put, how few companies are going to be allowed to have gatekeeper control over the entertainment we receive and gatekeeper control over the civic dialogue that we have as citizens. I'm a small D Democrat as well as a large D Democrat, and I still hold to the notion, although some may think it's quaint now, that if you give the people the facts and the information they need to make a decision, more often than not, maybe not all the time, but more often than not, people will come out with a decision that inheres to the benefit of the country. But I think we are skating perilously close to the denial of that kind of information and data and facts to the people so that they can make intelligent judgments on huge questions of peace and war and education and health care and trade policy and jobs and all these other things that are so critical to our future.
I know you talked about these this morning, but can you tick off a list for me of the upcoming in the next maybe next half a year issues that are coming up, and how can people who are watching help you move this forward?
The big issue that's going to be before the Federal Communications Commission is this whole media consolidation thing. 2 years ago, the majority voted over my strenuous objections and Commissioner Edelstein's strenuous objections to greatly loosen the ownership cap so that in many markets around the country, one company could actually own 3 television stations, 8 radio stations, the cable distributorship, the cable networks, maybe even the portals to the internet. That's not reflective of much diversity and localism. Those rules were sent back to us by the court, who found that our analysis was lacking, and it certainly was. We told them that long before it went to court. But now we have to rewrite those rules. The good news is that they were sent back. The bad news is they were sent back where? To the very same folks who dreamed them up in the first place. So one entirely plausible scenario is we end up with rules just as bad as the ones that were originally voted, or worse. And one very plausible scenario is that right now, a lot of these big media companies may be thinking, well, let's see here, we've got control for a while longer here. Maybe this is the time to drive this locomotive home, so why don't we just kind of doing a piecemeal approach this time. We don't want those 3 million people contacting the FCC again like they did last time. We don't want that kind of grassroots issue. Just do it quietly, and we'll repeal the newspaper broadcast cross-ownership rule 1 month, or we'll do something on duopolies the next month, a little bit at a time. Don't get people excited. And if that strategy, if they get away with that strategy, we lose. Media democracy loses. The people of the United States lose. So what I'm bound and determined to do is to make sure that we have a process going forward, starting now, of hearings around the country in which all of my colleagues, not just Commissioner Adelstein and me, but all of the commissioners participate. I want to see a comprehensive rulemaking where we look at how these rules interact with one another, and we ask all the questions that they refused to ask last time. What's the impact of consolidated media on minorities? What's the impact of consolidated media on families and children? What's the effect on small business, local business, and all that? There's so much that we don't know. And I'm not saying we have to spend the rest of our lives doing research here, but we at least ought to ask the questions and have a credible record before we go ahead and vote on it. So that's very important. That's issue number one. There are we're trying to tee up, Commissioner Adelstein and I, a number of items. Involving the future of the public interest. What are the public interest obligations of digital television broadcasters? We're now in the transition to digital TV. One station in a town with digital TV may be able to broadcast up to 5 or 6 different program streams. If a person owns 2 stations in a town, all of a sudden they can broadcast 12 different programming streams. Boy, that makes them pretty powerful there. And we're giving those broadcasters new spectrum rights to do this. What do the American people get in return for that? What do they have a right to expect? If there are now 12 channels available, maybe there's room to cover community events, local sports, congressional races, mayoral races, local entertainment, regional genius that I was talking about earlier. So we need to tee that up. We have another item where maybe we can finally get a decision that will mandate that companies put their public file, their station record, up on the internet. I think that'd be wonderful to shine the spotlight of public opinion and the spotlight of the internet, where people could really see. You know, now people go to a station and sometimes they can get in, as the law says, you have a right to go look at a station's file during their normal course of business hours. That doesn't always happen. But boy, imagine if all of a sudden you just pop it up on the internet and take a look at it. I think we'll learn a whole lot about what's going on in media markets, local media markets, when we get that. So those are just a few of the items that are boiling at the FCC, we'll be boiling.
The only thing else I want to ask you before these guys, they have much more specific questions than I do for you, is why are you doing public service? What got you interested in public service? Why are you doing
that? Oh, I've always been kind of a public service junkie, I guess you might call it. I've always been interested in government since I was a little kid. I had an opportunity to work for Senator Hollings for 15 years, and he kind of imbued me with this idea of public service, and I find it rewarding. I find it's, these are fascinating issues to deal with. You can really make a difference. You can have an impact, and you can do some good.
Was there any particular moment, anything you did as a kid, anything you read, saw, heard that pushed you in that direction over anything else?
No, I can't really think of any one thing, but I know when I was 12 or 13 years old, I was interested in following elections on TV, and I was kind of student of presidents and all. I guess that's what got me interested in studying the history of that.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Fine, gentlemen.
All right, here comes the tough stuff, huh?
So, let's see, just for positioning on microphones, would you like to have a mic as well here?
No, are you still recording?
I can, yeah.
Is the audio then fine from here? So you're getting this.
Okay, yes.
Fine. Okay.
My name is John Grebe from WZBC, a campus community radio station in Boston.
Great.
I wonder, just to start out with a general question, how have religious broadcasters fared in gaining radio licenses and channels and frequencies compared to community and public and educational broadcasters?
Well, I think all of these things that you mentioned, whether it's religious or community-oriented, are so important that we've got to find a way to make space available for them all. And that's one of the things we ought to be looking at when we're talking about media consolidation and tying up so much of the spectrum by a few. I'm a big believer in low-power radio, for example, as a way to bring localism and diversity to the airwaves. We have tried with ITFS spectrum and a number of other ways to accommodate educational and religious. But this is really important, and what I want to do very soon is have a hearing. You know, we've had these hearings on media ownership throughout the country, and I'd really like to get all the different religious groups together and find out how they think. I'd like to know better for myself what they think the extent of the problem is and how their opportunities have been either expanded or diminished as a result of the profound changes that we've been through in our media markets in the United States over the last 15 years.
Have you got together with community and educational broadcasters, non-religious, to do
Sure.
that?
Sure. And, you know, there's a lot of those folks out in St. Louis here this weekend.
And in the matter of FM radio, there's an interesting set-aside, the 88 to 92 FM band, roughly one-fifth of the channels set aside for non-commercial broadcasters. Do you see efforts to put that in place in other media coming, in digital television, in digital radio, in community broadband, or whatever the new media is?
I think we have to tee those issues up. I think we're a ways from teeing them up in some of these things. I don't think we have the basic ground rules even set with regard to digital television. And it goes back to the public interest obligations that I was talking about a few minutes ago. What are the basic rules of the road going to be? But if you have an enhanced capacity to carry, if you have so much more spectrum and all these compression technologies, so you can put forth six program streams on a station, and probably more than that in a few years, then we have to find a way to make that work for expanding community and religious and local and civic news.
I'd love to ask you a little bit about broadcast license purchasing and auctioning and even trading. Particularly, there are these cases.
Interrupt for one sec. I'm the lawyer here. He cannot, as you start getting into these cases, it's getting into more adjudicatory matters, which he's actually not allowed to talk about.
I understand.
So we have to be real careful how you ask what you ask. You can't get into any specifics at all about adjudicatory matters.
I understand. But great. That's better. Good. If I could ask that question just generally, in matters of, say, one owner holding a lot of licenses, and being able to trade or sell those licenses. Is that something that there should be certain restrictions about, especially involving licenses for non-commercial broadcasting? Are there restrictions at all?
I'm not sure I understand quite what you're...
I guess what I'm wondering is, if one owner owns many or dozens or hundreds of broadcast licenses and would trade them to make a profit on the open market, is that something the FCC supports or condones, especially?
Well, I would hope not. I mean, this is the whole issue that's the whole question that's at issue in media ownership. How many outlets can one person control, or are there schemes whereby they're evading the limits that we have right now by letting other family members, for example, control our own station, when in reality it's all part of the. It's all part of the same mix. So, yes, we need to look going forward very carefully at that. We have to have some structural limitations on ownership. And then on top of that, we have to have some behavioral rules that redound to the public interest requirements and obligations.
Let me let my colleague John take over. Just ask a couple of quick questions.
Okay.
Thank you. My name is John Anderson. I produce a syndicated radio program called Media Minutes. It's media reform news.
Mm-hmm.
On several dozen stations around the country at this point. I had some radio-related questions that I wanted to ask you. The first one is dealing with the coming of digital radio. Back in, I think it was 2002 or 2003, the FCC formally approved the in-band on-channel digital radio broadcast standard.
Right.
And there was an interesting quote that you made in your statement on that vote, which said, "There's a lot we do not know about the technical standards of IBOC, including how it functions in the real world. And I was just wondering if the FCC had collected more data, because I know that there are concerns about interference and spectrum usage fitting a digital signal onto the existing FM and AM channels, and there's especially been issues with AM. And I was wondering if the FCC has done more research on that, and if we could see a forthcoming elucidation of that.
I think this research is continuing. I think this is something of a priority. I think there's a general appreciation at the Commission that, that digital radio is something that holds really considerable promise, not only for, you know, enhancing the quality of the sound, but just enhancing diversity generally. So I think we're looking for ways to do that. It's taken a long time to get these studies done, and it seems it's just kind of incremental and all that. But I think we are moving along and moving in the right direction on that.
One thing that I was kind of surprised not to see a concern expressed about with regard to the IBOC standard is the fact that in the digital realm, stations will require two licenses. They will require a license from the government to broadcast, and then they will also require a license from Ubiquiti to use the technology because it's proprietary. And I was just wondering if anyone at the FCC had ever expressed any concerns about a possible jurisdictional shift in the enforcement efforts being made.
A jurisdictional switch that would do what?
Well, I was thinking along the lines of, say, someone decides to put together a digital radio kit, like they reverse engineer the IBOC technology and then put together a kit or something and sell that. And IBOC could then go, you know, Ubiquiti, the company behind IBOC, could then go and file suit in court to, you know, restrict the use of their technology. And so basically going forward, stations that convert to IBOC will have to pay regular license fees. Subscription fees, actually, to use the technology. And it just seems like that might be some sort of wacky, you know, it's another level.
I think we have to be on guard to make sure that that the public oversight of this is the primary oversight, and that the objectives and the goals that we have for digital radio operate under that public oversight and cannot be interfered with by some subset organization.
Okay. My second question dealing with radio is based on a comment that you made at a localism, I think it was a localism hearing in Vermont.
Mm-hmm. Burlington?
Yeah, a year or two ago with Bernie Sanders. And there were comments made about low-power FM and the necessity for low-power FM. And there were specific references made to a station in Brattleboro, Vermont, which is an unlicensed micro-radio station. And you were actually quoted in an article saying, you know, I don't condone the breaking of rules, but I can understand the pent-up demand and the need for a community radio station in small towns like Brattleboro. And I was just wondering if your general feelings vis-a-vis micro radio have changed over the years, especially with the implementation.
Well, what I was trying to say is obviously we have to be enhancing the opportunities for community radio and for local radio, and in the atmosphere that we live, you can understand people getting frustrated with that and maybe getting involved in ways that go beyond where they should be involved. I think it just gets back to really the need to make sure we have good processes for low-power FM, low-power stations, and that's what we ought to be focusing on.
A follow-up on that, has anyone heard anything about the McCain's, John McCain's low-power FM expansion bill, which would essentially roll back the restrictions passed by Congress and re-expand the LPFM service back to its 2,000 parameters?
Well, I think that's there. I couldn't give you a legislative update on that.
Okay. And my final question is...
You know anything about the...
You can talk to some of the members, the congressional members, and hear about that.
Yeah, I'm going to do that.
There was talk about a House companion bill at some point. Although I'm totally speaking off the record, obviously, there was talk about House companion bills.
Oh, wow.
That's something.
Yeah, that's going to be the sticking point for sure.
You should talk to some of the House members who are here, staff.
Okay. And the final question goes back to the concept of the ownership rules revisions that are going to have to take place and the potential for piecemeal passage of them, like you mentioned before. There has also been a lot of rumblings on Capitol Hill about rewriting the Telecom Act of 1996. And I'm just wondering if you had any recommendations for public that want to be interested in following this. Should people be orienting toward the FCC and rulemaking proceedings, or is the possibility of a Telecom Act rewrite, throwing a monkey wrench into this?
No, the Congress is the principal driver of telecommunications policy, and there are a lot of folks saying we will have a telecommunications bill rewrite maybe this year, maybe next year. It's going to take a while. Meanwhile, life goes on at the Federal Communications Commission, so I think an involved and a caring and a concerned citizen has to keep their eye on both of these. Let me add another thing, though. I think that the Federal Communications Commission could be doing a lot more to facilitate the passage of enlightened telecom legislation. I think as an expert at an independent agency, we ought to be teeing up options for the Congress. If you go down this road on broadband, for example, or this road on media consolidation, and you take this option, here are the costs that we see, here are the benefits. And do this, all these questions, and try in a way to create some parameters for the debate. Otherwise, what you get into is a situation where Congressman so-and-so introduces his bill and Senator so-and-so introduces her bill, and that's all well and good, but then we, without any input from the commission or anything, we just kind of debate between there for a couple of years, and Congress really hasn't had the benefit of the expertise of the commission. And I'm not saying these are things that we have to vote on and agree on with the commission, but we just ought to say we realize there are different ways to treat broadband, do some bureau studies. And these are the problems and these are the opportunities associated with it. I think an independent agency ought to be doing that. I think Congress has a right to expect an independent agency to do that. And in point of fact, we have not been doing that.
A follow-up question to that.
We need to finish at some point.
Sure, this is my last question.
Okay.
The follow-up question is under the Powell regime, the FCC was quite reactive. It was, we take our orders from Congress, we take our orders from the courts, and we're doing what they're telling us to do. What you're describing here sounds like a lot more of a proactive advisory FCC, which is incredibly hard.
Well, I don't know. I necessarily agree with the premise that you laid down for the Powell Commission, but I do have an idea of a very proactive FCC. I don't think that we are just given the job of sitting off behind closed doors and adjudicating disputes. I think we were given important public policy oversight to write rules for, and I think that brings with it a responsibility to go out and tell senators and congressmen, and even more than that, the American people, hey, we're thinking of doing this, such and such a media ownership. We're thinking of greatly loosening the ownership rules on the spectrum that you, the average American, every American owns the public airwaves. No company owns an airwave in this country of ours. We're thinking of doing something pretty radical to that, and we're going to do that under the radar scope. I mean, that's, if you do it under the radar scope and you don't tell people that, then I think that's really an affront to democracy. I think we need to get out and say this is what we're thinking of doing. We need to get out and have hearings. Then we need to come up with a proposed rule, publish that proposed rule and put it out before we finalize it and let people comment on that so they can see how these rules are going to operate. Then and only then go ahead and vote a final rule. If we had done that in the course of the media ownership debate in 2003, we'd be a heck of a lot better off than we are right now.
Seeing as how the commission chairman sets the agenda in many respects in this way, is this something that you could see Kevin Martin?
I'm hopeful that we will have a little more of an open and a participatory process at the FCC. Kevin Martin and I came to the FCC at the same time. We've fought a lot of battles together. Sometimes we disagree, but I think we agree on a lot of the processes that should be used to arrive at decision-making in the FCC, and I look forward to those being instituted and implemented at the commission under his tenure.
Decisions about VNRs. I just wondered if it's not news distortion, is there an argument for at least better disclosure?
Absolutely, and my colleague Commissioner Adelstein testified to that effect up on the Hill, and I think you see rather broad bipartisan support in favor of doing something, so I think you will see some congressional action with that. Our role in that, of course, is to make sure that broadcasters make the disclosures that they need to be making.
Thank you very much,
Commissioner.
Oh, no, 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 no,